headlines. Russia's President Vladimir Putin says Moscow plans to sell its gas to, quote, unfriendly countries in rubles, sending European gas prices soaring across the continent. Palestinian resistance groups hailed Tuesday's operation against Israel, vowing more operations against Tel Aviv regime in response to its crimes. Also ahead, Iran's foreign minister says Tehran will continue to support Damascus in its fight against terrorism until the country liberates all of its occupied regions. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, the Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country will switch its gas sales to Russian currency for what he calls unfriendly countries. Putin said Russia will continue to supply natural gas in accordance with volumes and prices fixed in previously concluded contracts. He added the changes will only affect the currency of payment, which will be changed to Russian rubles. Putin said the government and the central bank have 1 week to come up with a solution on how to apply those changes. The announcement caused some European wholesale gas prices to increase by up to 30% on Wednesday. Moscow has drawn up a list of what it calls unfriendly countries that include the US, UK, and EU nations. Other countries like Japan and Canada are included as well. Russia is furious at them for imposing sanctions over the Ukraine conflict and says they have destroyed Moscow's trust. Political commentator William Jones says Russia's decision to invoice some Western gas buyers in rubles shows that the US cannot have full control over global trade.
Well, obviously also it's a defensive move. I mean, Russia has got to do what it has to do to maintain its production capabilities, to maintain as much of its trade connections as possible, and to expand those, perhaps selling more in Asia from what they're going to not be selling in Europe, because it's the question, on the one hand, of survival under very intense sanctions, but on the other hand, it's an attempt to indicate that the world is not totally controlled by the dictate of the United States, but that other options can be found. And the reason that Russia can do this is that Russia is not entirely alone. The general atmosphere, of course, is, and the drumbeat in the press particularly, is trying to describe President Putin as some demon who wants world hegemony, but most of the world just doesn't believe it. And most of the world needs oil and gas and wants development and feels that that Russia is an plays an important role in this.
It's day 29 of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. The defense ministry says its forces have hit an arms depot near Ukraine's northwestern city of Rivne.
On the evening of March 22nd, high-precision, long-range sea-based weapons struck an arms depot in Orziv, 14 kilometers northwest of Rivne city. As a result of the strike, a large depot of weapons and military equipment of the Ukrainian troops, including those received from Western countries, was destroyed.
The spokesman said Russia has hit nearly 100 military assets of the Ukrainian armed forces near the capital, Kiev. Kiev's mayor says Ukrainians have pushed back Russian troops from several areas around the capital. In another development, the two sides have agreed on 9 humanitarian corridors to evacuate civilians from Ukrainian cities. They exclude the southern port city of Mariupol, where Ukrainian authorities say around 100,000 people are trapped. Meanwhile, a draft resolution put forth by Russia calling for aid access and civilian protection in Ukraine failed at the UN Security Council. The motion received 2 votes in favor from Russia and China, while 13 council members abstained. China has slammed the West's approach to Russia over its military action in Ukraine, drawing fire from Western countries that accuse Beijing of taking sides with Moscow. Now, NATO urges China not to support Russia in its military operation in Ukraine.
China has provided Russia with political support, including by spreading blatant lies and disinformation. And allies are concerned that China could provide material support for the Russian invasion. I expect leaders will call on China to live up to its responsibilities as a member of the UN Security Council, refrain from supporting Russia's war effort, and join the rest of the world in calling for an immediate peaceful end to this war.
The NATO chief made the remarks ahead of US President Joe Biden's meeting with EU and NATO leaders in the Belgian capital. The United States has also warned China not to take advantage of business opportunities created by sanctions against Moscow over military operations in Ukraine. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the US government has conveyed that message to China. He also called on the European Union and individual European countries to take a similar approach. Beijing opposes sanctions on Russia, saying sweeping and indiscriminate measures would only make the people suffer and should not be further escalated. Meanwhile, Germany is sending 2,000 additional anti-tank weapons to Ukraine to help Kiev in its military confrontation with Russian forces. The announcement was made by a German parliamentary source who declined to be named. Ukrainian forces have already received 1,000 anti-tank weapons, 500 missile launchers, and 500 surface-to-air missiles from Germany. Berlin has promised to send nearly 3,000 missiles of that type to Ukraine. German authorities say the rest of the weapons are on their way to Ukraine. Germany was reluctant to send weapons to Ukraine as Russian troops massed at its border last year. But Chancellor Olaf Scholz changed that policy following the start of the Russian military operation. The UK has also indicated that it will provide Ukraine with about 6,000 new defensive missiles and £25 million in financial backing for its military. Turning to other news now, reactions pour in following Tuesday's operation against Israel in the occupied territories, with resistance groups vowing more operations in response to the regime's crimes. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has hailed the operation, saying it reflected the Palestinian people's resistance and their rejection of occupiers. The movement added that resistance is the sole way to victory and full liberation of Palestine. The operation was also praised by Palestinian resistance groups. Hamas called it a heroic act illustrating the Palestinians' resolve to continue resistance until the liberation of the occupied territories. The Islamic Jihad movement said the move was a natural response to Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Also, a coalition of resistance groups in the occupied West Bank also warned Tel Aviv that it will pay for its crimes. Earlier, we reached out to activist and political commentator Mick Napier for his take on the Israeli atrocities against Palestinians, and he believes Palestinians have a lawful right to resist Israel's occupation of their land by any means they deem appropriate.
Anybody who looks at Palestinian resistance can look at it through a legal eye. The Geneva Convention, of course, justifies the right of people who are threatened with colonialism, colonization, and dispossession to resist by any means that they deem appropriate. But it's not only the Geneva Convention, it's any morality, any system of morality gives to people who have been abused, either individuals or whole peoples, the right to resist. And as the resistance factions in Palestine have stated, this is an inevitable reaction of what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. The settlers who were killed by the attacker are thieves. They are part of an overarching government plan, not only to discriminate against the Bedouin, but to drive them off their lands, to drive them out and make way for incoming Jewish colonists. And this isn't in the West Bank or Gaza. All the people concerned in this are Israeli citizens, the Palestinians, but they have no rights whatsoever against the Israeli program of ethnic cleansing.
Meanwhile, dozens of international organizations, human rights networks, academics, and researchers from 45 countries are calling on the UN and Western countries to impose sanctions on the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shannon has this report from the besieged at the Gaza Strip.
A delegation from the International Academic Campaign Against Occupation and Apartheid headed to the offices of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, OHCHR, as well as the UN Special Coordinator's Office, UNSCO, in Gaza. They handed the memorandum on Israeli apartheid signed by around 70 international organizations, human rights networks, academics, and researchers from 45 countries. The campaign is calling on the United Nations and Western countries to impose sanctions on the Israeli regime for its occupation of the Palestinian territories and its apartheid regime. The Israeli regime is an occupying power and has kept the Gaza Strip under a crippling blockade since 2007 and also waged four wars on the tiny enclave.
We are here to condemn Israeli apartheid, and we call on the international community to support the Palestinian people. We also demand and end the Israeli crimes. Israeli leaders must face justice for their crimes against the Palestinian people.
Tel Aviv also practices apartheid policies against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. Among Israel's apartheid policies is the demolition of Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. Israel also keeps thousands of Palestinian prisoners in its jails under inhumane detention conditions. Israeli forces also use excessive force to kill and maim peaceful Palestinian protesters in the blockaded Gaza Strip, as well as in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds.
Today we are here to prove that the crimes of the occupations against the Palestinians and the prisoners must be documented, and to support the Palestinians to obtain their rights.
Last month, at least 277 human rights groups and civil society organizations around the world denounced Israeli officials for imposing apartheid on Palestinians.
Observers say that Israel's apartheid against Palestinians is a cruel system of domination that constitutes a crime against humanity. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Iran's foreign minister says an agreement to revive the 2015 nuclear deal is closer than ever if the U.S. acts pragmatically. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said Iran is ready to have foreign ministers of countries belonging to the deal gather in Vienna to finalize the agreement. Iran and those countries have been engaged in talks for a year to revive the deal that ran into trouble because of the U.S. withdrawal in 2018. The Iranian foreign minister made those comments in a press conference with his Syrian counterpart in Damascus. Amir Abdullahian and Faisal al-Muqdad discussed ways to boost bilateral ties, including on trade and economy.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian arrived in Damascus heading a high-ranking delegation. He met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and discussed the implementation of bilateral cooperation agreements. Talks covered cooperation in fighting terrorism, in which Abdullahian renewed Iran's support to Syria for the full liberation of all its territories. The top diplomat briefed President Assad on the Vienna talks on the revival of the JCPOA. Assad hailed Iran for adhering to principles and rights in the track adopted during the negotiations. He asserted that reaching a deal has become more important in service of Iran and the region's interest, as well as international equilibrium.
We had good meetings with President Assad and Foreign Minister Faisal Maqdad. We welcome the new approach by some Arab states in restoring relations with Syria. We reaffirmed Iran's readiness to develop relations with Syria and discuss increasing the level of tourist exchange. We hope that in the near future, the presidents of both countries would meet.
A separate meeting was also held between the foreign ministers of Syria and Iran. Focus was laid on the notable increase of trade exchange and means of overcoming the impact of economic sanctions on the two countries.
We discussed means of confronting unilateral illegal sanctions on both states, as well as developments currently happening in the meetings of the Syrian Constitutional Committee in Geneva. Syria and Iran's stances are identical in this regard. We are in favor of a successful result. However, the other side is not working for national interests.
Syria was the first destination of the regional tour of the Iranian delegation, which also includes Lebanon. Abdullahian's visit is one of many exchanged between both countries' officials. It signals the extensive and continuous cooperation between the two allies at all times, which resulted in a defeat of terror in Syria and currently aims to boost economic partnerships. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
And Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps issues a stern warning to Israel. It urges the regime to stop its, quote, evil acts or face Iran's swift response. In recent weeks, everyone saw how Tel Aviv, which repeatedly makes miscalculations, ended up suffering Iranian missile strikes. That's according to IRGC Chief Commander Major General Hossein Salami. He said if Israel repeats its acts of aggression, it will face such attacks again. On March 13, the IRGC launched missile strikes on the capital of Iraq's northern Kurdistan region. The IRGC said the strikes in Erbil targeted a strategic Israeli center and were in response to the regime's crimes. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
American families are fearful for their economic security. The pandemic hasn't yet ended. Schools and hospitals face ongoing staffing shortages, and the opioid epidemic is raging. Increasing military spending does nothing to address these problems, says Lindsay Kashagarian, journalist, in an article published under the heading U.S. military budget is more outrageous than ever. Stay tuned for more. Congress recently announced a bipartisan budget deal to fund the federal government through 2022. It's a lopsided budget if there ever was one. Even after America's longest war in Afghanistan ended last year, military spending isn't going down. In fact, it's skyrocketing upwards from $740 billion in the last budget set under Trump to $782 billion in this deal. The same new budget offers just $730 billion to meet urgent domestic needs at home. That means that even during a pandemic, supply chain crisis, and painful inflation, they will put more resources into the military and war than public health, education, green jobs, affordable housing, scientific and medical research, childcare, and every other domestic need combined. This is special treatment for the Pentagon recklessly squanders precious resources that could be used to strengthen the families and communities against compounding crises at home. American families are fearful for their economic security. The pandemic hasn't yet ended. Schools and hospitals face ongoing staffing shortages, and the opioid epidemic is raging. Meanwhile, the U.S. dependence on oil continues to fuel the climate crisis, while supporting corrupt authoritarian states and subjecting families to wild price swings. Increasing military spending does nothing to address these problems, and it won't make Americans safer. The U.S. military budget is already larger than the next 11 countries combined, and more than 12 times larger than Russia's. The budget deal also prioritizes militarization at home. It continues to fund the immigration enforcement agencies responsible for the worst abuses of the Trump era, including family separations and millions of deportations. It even maintains prior funding for Trump's inhumane and destructive border wall, which has already proven a costly boondoggle. The main winners are contractors who profit off human suffering. In recent years, more than half of all military spending has gone to for-profit private contractors. The new spending bill continues this windfall. It spends more on expensive weapons systems than even the Pentagon requested, and it continues lucrative contracts for companies that detain and surveil immigrants. The long-standing patterns of spending on war have enriched corporate profiteers, while leaving less for Americans' needs at home. They didn't prevent a disastrous war in Europe either. And yet, conservatives in Congress have insisted on plowing more money into the Pentagon year after year. In recent years, congressional opposition to unlimited Pentagon budgets and abusive immigrant detention practices has grown, with record numbers of members voting against completely unwarranted military spending hikes. But while their numbers are growing, there is still a minority. This deal is a sign that there is still a long way to go before the U.S. funding priorities match the American people's needs.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and we are here to present yet another episode of A Muslim Lady. If you remember, we have been discussing different issues regarding Muslim Lady. I'm Farman Ali Masumi, and with me in the studio, my wife, Razia Batul Najafi. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. I'm so glad that we are continuing the beautiful subject.
Today we are going to again talk a very, very interesting topic. We are discussing the beautiful sayings of Fatimatu Zahra, salamullah alayha. And in today's hadith, she is explaining, she is telling us about the beautiful relations she had with Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. As a husband and wife, how kind of relationship they had and how kind of relationship we as the followers we should have. So let's start with this beautiful hadith where she mentions, she speaks to Imam Ali alayhi salam and says, Ya Abul Hasan, inni la astahyi min ilahi. O Abul Hasan, I feel ashamed from my Lord Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, an ukallifa nafsaka ma la taqdiru alayh. That I tell you to do those things which you cannot, which you don't have power of doing those things. How politely, how beautifully she is telling us about this beautiful relationship, yeah?
Amazing. But you know, the story is like that, that one day Imam Ali alayhi salam came home, and what he's observing, he's watching that there's no food to eat at all. And he asked Lady Fatima Zahra salamu alayha, that why she did not tell him, inform him about it. So the answer was that inni astahi. I love the way she's connecting it with Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. I feel ashamed in front of my Lord. You know, like she's always feeling the presence of Allah tabarak wa ta'ala. Allah, and because of presence of Allah, she's respecting her husband too. So look at the, you know, role of this faith. You know, faith can just change our behavior, especially with our, you know, beloved one, with our husband and family. The first point is that why she never says, Ya Ali.
Yeah, that is strange.
Yeah, I never seen she would say just, you know, she would call her husband by name. Ya Ali, Ya Ali, Ya Ali. Ali is a beautiful name. You know, we all say Ya Ali, Ali, Ali. But Lady Fatima, she would say Ya Abul Hasan.
Abul Hasan.
Yeah, what do you think?
Due to the respect she had towards Imam Ali alayhi salam, and due to the love and, you know, to indicate that how much she cared about Imam Ali al-Islam. In those era, other general public also, if they wanted to respect somebody, they would speak with their kunya, means Ya Aba al-Hasan, Ya Aba Abdullah, Ya Aba Ali, like this, yeah?
Exactly.
So it shows that
respect,
which is the key element of the relationship between husband and wife. The mutual respect, the respect which husband and wife have towards each other, this can build a very, very strong relationship. So we are going to have a short break. Please, listeners, don't go away. Stay tuned. Inshallah, we will come back soon.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So by one simple statement, Lady Fatima is just giving us so many lessons. She's telling us as a Muslim lady that, you know, how you have to call your husband. Number two, how you should have the, you know, presence of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala in your day-to-day life, you know. Unfortunately, nowadays, blindly, we are just following the West sometimes, and we say, you know, I'm so frank with my partner, so therefore, why should I respect him, give him any title? They feel it's very backward, you know.
Unfortunately, because of the, you know,
sick culture. Yeah, it's an influence. And the culture which we are making out of ignorance, you know, because of jahala. If you are, like, who can be more closer, more frank than Ali wa Fatima, alayhim as-salam?
Yeah, no one. Perfect match on this earth.
Exactly.
Yeah. It means in that sense that these, the holy, you know, personalities, these are infallibles. Both husband and wife, perfect match on this
earth. Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So, you know, in so many areas of life, Lady Fatima az-Zahra is just teaching us about balance, perfect balance of love and respect.
So let me tell that in return, Imam Ali alayhi salam would also call Hazrat Fatima az-Zahra with Sayyidati.
Beautiful.
This is something amazing.
Yeah, I think this is more amazing. More
Sayyidati. Sayyidati means my lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My lady in that sense, like my...
Like my queen.
Yeah. Sayyidati has so much meaning. And the one who is saying Sayyidati, my leader, Sayyidul Awliya, Sayyidul A'imma, he's a leader of, you know, in chief of all the A'imma.
The second perfect personality on this creation of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala after Rasulullah, he says Sayyidati, which means a lot. And we have to take this very seriously in our relationship.
And the key point is that you can be very affectionate, kind towards your, you know, beloved one, towards your family members, when you receive that love from Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. You know, that is a very, very subtle and very deep point that Lady Fatima az-Zahra, salamullah alayha, you know, her heart, her tongue, her thoughts, everything is so pure, so clean, very sincere in the way she used to, like, take care of others, even the neighbors, you know. So husband is husband, but she's always caring about others. Therefore, one of the title of Lady Fatima is Hania.
Yeah, Hania. Yeah.
You know, the one who's very extremely kind. From
one of
kindness
the
of Allah,
qualities of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is kind, the most kind.
And one more point which we can take from this beautiful statement of Lady Fatima az-Zahra salamullah alayha, that in relationships, especially from wife's side, that you can be very successful as a Muslim wife if you have less expectation from your husband. Yeah? Because mostly wives are more... In expectation, because financially husband is providing each and everything. So she's always looking for, you know, there sometimes there's so much greed, you know, so much greed and lust is there. So Lady Fatima az-Zahra is just satisfied, content, you know, whatever is the, you know, like the basic need is food. You know, she doesn't have the most basic need, but still smile is in her face.
The respect.
And the peace exactly in her mind. So why? From where it comes? Why she's having that much less, you know, expectation from her spouse? So this is the very, very, you know, crucial points which we as a Muslim ladies we need in this era. Because nowadays everything is based on me and my life. You know, me.
Very much self.
Exactly, selfishness.
Selfish life we have. And we compare ourselves to different, our neighbors, our friends. They have this beautiful house. They have these things. I don't have these things. Then when these qualities come, they bombard in your mind. Then you get affected and you lose your temperament sometimes. And, you know, you complain to your husband, why we don't have this, why we don't have that. Yeah. So Lady Fatima az-Zahra salamullah alayha, because she was infallible and she was away from all these qualities. So by this hadith, she is teaching us and our ladies also how to be patient and how to be satisfied and how to be content. Whatever your husband is bringing, although their husbands should try their best to provide them with all the basic needs.
I love this amazing dua of Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullahi Alaiha. And I beg my listeners that please keep this dua, one of your dua of qunut, like when you are praying, even in wajib prayers or after namaz, the ta'qibat, you know. The dua says, Allahumma qanni'ni bima razaqtani wa farrighni lima khalaqtani lah. The dua has 3-4 sentences, but I love all these two phrases most. That she says, oh Allah, give me that contentment that whatever you have given to me, all kind of risk, like husband, my children, the house, you know, whatever. Everything is risk. Yeah, the bounties of Allah.
Even spiritual, qualities.
Yeah, knowledge, and my brain, you know, the level of understanding, everything is risk, everything. So I have to be satisfied. I shouldn't even compare, even my kids. You know, sometimes you say, look, other boys are so active. My boy is not like that, you know. So everything is test. And then she says, وَفَرِّغْنِي لِمَا خَلَقْتَ لِلَّهِ. Oh Allah, make me free for what you have created
for
me.
For the purpose you have created me for.
So we cannot be free if we are having very lustful life and too much demanding life, too much expectation in life, very greedy in life, like greediness. Even if I'm asking so much from my husband, why you don't appreciate the way I'm just managing this house, cleaning the house and cooking and, you know, everything. Why you're not, you know, looking at it? So that means I'm having expectation that my husband should appreciate me, for example, my children should appreciate me, or financially and other whatever needs I have in my day-to-day life. So farighni lima khalaqtani la, that is also so beautiful. Oh Allah, give me time
that I can be free from all these hustles.
Exactly. Pay attention to my purpose of life and acquire knowledge, as Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullah Alaiha has
emphasized. We have time for everything in our these busy lives. With your social media, with your friends, with your, you know, worldly works, except Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Unfortunately, this is something very bitter to admit, but this is a reality that we have so many excuses for giving time and focusing and having that beautiful concentration in front of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala for Allah. Yeah.
Inshallah, Allah give us this tawfiq and helps us bringing this intention in our minds that whatever we do on this earth in our day-to-day lives, that is according to his teachings and according to the purpose he created us on this earth. And with this intention, if you do whatever we do, is definitely will be a great step towards the closeness towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Such a beautiful discussion.
Alhamdulillah.
I hope our dear listeners also have benefited from this beautiful discussion. Until next episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Congratulations to all Iranians and everyone who celebrates the ancient festivity of Nowruz. On behalf of myself and all my colleagues here at IRIB English Radio, we wish you a wonderful Nowruz, full of happiness and prosperity.
In the limelight.
A leaked report that shows the U.S. military knew for years about dangers to civilian areas follows disclosures of toxic PFAS contamination hidden from the Senate. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by John Mitchell, Ryder. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Military Hid Fuel Pipeline Flaws from Public in Okinawa. Stay tuned for more. A leaked report describes significant deficiencies in the safety and integrity of the pipelines used by the U.S. military to shuttle fuel to U.S. Marine Corps and Air Force warplanes in Okinawa Prefecture, Japan. As early as 2014, the military discovered monitoring system flaws and dangerous leakages in the pipelines, some of which run beneath civilian communities. But it waited 4 years before initiating repairs and has never alerted Japanese authorities. The dangers have only come to light thanks to a whistleblower who made public a report produced under contact for the Defense Logistics Agency Energy, or DLAE, the Department of Defense agency that supplies fuel to military facilities. Published in March 2015, the report details inspections of vapor monitoring systems that detect fuel leaks along the 100-plus miles of pipelines in the prefecture. The results showed 43 of the 60 monitoring systems were inoperable due to problems like broken sensors and alarms. In at least one case, the alarm and sensor system were missing entirely. The devices are supposed to notify the local DLAE compound of leaks, which can cause environmental contamination, explosions, and fires. The disclosure comes on top of recent revelations that the military may have hidden details of PFAS and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, contamination on Okinawa from a senior member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, including information pointing to the possible exposure of children at a civilian school. The whistleblower, who was granted anonymity to avoid professional reprisal, told Intercept, "The report needed to be made public to show that the U.S. government is not following the policies set up to run the pipelines safely," adding, "The government ought to have come out and been open about these problems. Many people on Okinawa don't even know these pipelines are running beneath their feet," unquote. The pipelines travel below five municipalities, carrying more than 90 million gallons of aviation fuel per year to the island's U.S. Air Force and Marine Corps bases. One of the report's photos shows a monitoring post near a bowling alley in a civilian area of Okinawa City, where the site sensor failed checks and face problems that inspectors described as significant. In the final recommendations, the report's authors estimated repairs to the system would cost $252,900, and they advised retesting within 6 months to comply with the DLA's guidelines. But the agency did not start repairs on the broken monitors until 2018, according to U.S. Forces Japan. In a statement, USFJ said, DLA does not possess records on the system prior to 2014, meaning that the military could have been operating the system without adequate safety protocols since its installations in 1983. The USFJ spokesperson said all DLA energy facilities in Okinawa are secured and inaccessible to local personnel. Therefore, even in the event of a fuel release and a monitor malfunction, there is no danger to the safety of Okinawa residents. But this statement is inaccurate. The pipelines run beneath densely populated residential areas, which would be seriously impacted if a leak occurred. USFJ explained that it had installed an automatic fuel monitoring system referred to as AFHE in 2014. Monitoring of the system is 24/7 by the AFHE system, our control room, and round-the-clock maintenance teams that patrol and inspect our fuel system, the spokesperson said. But the whistleblower disputes these assurances. They told Intercept, the system still isn't safe. Staff ignore alarms when they all go off and the communication systems don't work. Wildlife gets into the boxes and damages them. There are wiring problems, plus the monitoring boxes are rotten and rusted. It's like having a broken smoke detector at home, but much worse. One day, people living near the pipeline might wake up in a lake of fuel. At the time of the publication, U.S. Forces Japan had not responded to the claims. If there were similar problems with fuel pipelines at military bases within the United States, said the whistleblower, the Environmental Protection Agency would be expected to get involved and attempt to remediate the issues. In Japan, there is no such civilian oversight. Lack of accountability has long angered Okinawans who, for decades, have campaigned for an overhaul of the Japan-U.S. Status of Forces Agreement, which allows the U.S. military to operate outside Japanese laws. Under SOFA, the U.S. military completely controls access to its 78 facilities in Japan, 31 of which are in Okinawa Prefecture, and only rarely does it grant access to Japanese authorities. On-duty service members are exempt from prosecution for damage to Japanese property, and the military is not required to remediate contamination on land returned to civilian usage. Because of SOFA, the U.S. military can evade responsibility for such problems. It can hide environmental damage because there is no mechanism to force the U.S. military to open up the information or tell the Japanese government, said Manabu Sato, a professor of political science at Okinawa International University, Ginawan City. Compounding the issue is Japan's long-standing tendency not to take seriously Okinawans' grievances about being forced to host so many military facilities, he said. It's just the latest in a long series of similar incidents. In recent years, environmental infractions committed by the U.S. military on Okinawa include radioactive contamination from depleted uranium, massive spills of fuel, and the discovery of 108 barrels of dioxin-tainted herbicides buried beneath a children's soccer pitch. The military often hides these problems. Many have only been made public via requests filed under the U.S. Freedom of Information Act. The most extensive contamination comes from PFAS chemicals contained in firefighting foams. Near Defense Department's facilities on Okinawa, farmers' fields, natural springs, and rivers are polluted. And the substances have contaminated the drinking water sources of 450,000 residents. Such contamination is pervasive in the United States too, but unlike at home, where the federal government has begun to compel the Defense Department to implement surveys and cleanups, on Okinawa, there has been no such push for accountability. One example of the inaction could be the U.S. military's concealment of details of the Okinawa contamination from American elected officials. Recently, emails obtained via FOIA from the U.S. Marine Corps show the military misled a senior member of the Senate Armed Services Committee about PFAS contamination in the prefecture. In autumn 2018, the office of Senator Jean Shaheen requested information from the military about whether it had identified PFAS contamination on Okinawa, how it was mitigating and remediating the problem, and how it was cooperating with local governments to protect surrounding communities. The military's responses were inaccurate, incomplete, and minimized the severity of the contamination. On October 18, 2018, the military sent an email concerning contamination levels from Marine Corps Air Station Futenma, a major air base in the populous central Okinawan city of Ginawan. It is stated tests were conducted at the fire training pit and two stormwater conveyances at MCAS Futenma. The fire training pit results showed levels for PFOS and PFOA consistent with the historical use of the site for training with AFFF. Concurrent samples taken from stormwater conveyances upstream and downstream from the airfield were below 5 ppt for PFOS and PFOA. The comment implies that contamination from the fire training area is not impacting off-base communities, but it is misleading. The stormwater test sites that registered the very low levels of contamination were located almost a mile from the fire training area, so these numbers did not prove the site was safe. A Marine Corps email dated November 20th of the same year contained a corrected graphic acknowledging the sample sites and the fire training area were not hydrologically connected. It also revealed severe PFOS and PFOA contamination of 28,800 parts per thousand, but whether this information was sent to the senator's office is unclear. The Marine Corps additionally did not disclose that the corrected map indicates that water from the contaminated training site has been flowing toward a local elementary school. When the existence of the map was reported by the Okinawa Times on December 9th, parents of children who attend the school expressed their outrage and demanded that the school grounds be checked for contamination. In 2017, a window frame from a U.S. military helicopter fell onto the same school's grounds while children were taking an outdoor physical education class. Asked a local mother "Where should our children walk?" She told the Okinawa Times that she was worried about both the sky above the school and the ground beneath it. "Schools have the image of being safe, but that's not true there," she said. Another email obtained via OFA from the Marine Corps includes a summary of the Air Force's reply to Shaheen. It contains misleading statements implying that the Japanese government was allowed to conduct PFAS checks within Kadena Air Base, and that Tokyo had concluded the base was not responsible for the contamination of Hija River, a source of the island's drinking water. Neither is accurate. The emails obtained from the Marine Corps omit information the military possessed at the time of Shaheen's inquiry. Severe PFAS contamination had been detected in groundwater and the fire training area at Kadena Air Base, and natural springs sacred to Okinawans, indigenous religious communities near Marine Corps Air Station Futenma, have been polluted with some of the highest levels of PFAS ever detected in Japan since widespread checks began in 2016. The emails also do not address Shaheen's inquiry about the military's cooperation with local governments. Since 2016, Okinawan authorities have requested access to inspect Kadena Air Base, but such requests have still not been approved. For the past 2 years, the U.S. Air Force has further hindered investigations into PFAS contamination at Kadena Air Base by stalling FOIA requests and refusing to process administrative appeals on the delays. At the time of publication, Shaheen's office had not responded to requests for comment. U.S. Forces Japan and the U.S. Defense Department did not explain whether they have provided Shaheen's office with updated, accurate information. Sato, the Okinawa International University professor, said, "The military thinks that if they can hide its PFAS contamination from the Senate Armed Services Committee, then they will be safe from any investigations. But once the information is revealed, they will be in a very bad position. The government of Japan doesn't want to anger the U.S. It wants to please them in any way. Tokyo has been ignoring these environmental problems for a long time, but as long as they occur in Okinawa, it dismisses them as only Okinawa issues and doesn't raise any fuss."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.